This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us. Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio Thursday, Friday. We've got Sweet 16 action in the NCAA tournament. And then we've got the Elite Eight. And then this weekend, we'll know who the final four teams are heading to Houston. We know one thing, who's going to be coaching the St. John's Red Storm, and that is the one and only Rick Pitino. All those rumors about him leaving Iona ended up being true. He is heading to New York City, just a couple of miles down from where he is in Iona, just a little bit north. Now he heads into the city where he'll be coaching St. John's. And for Rick Pitino, it comes full circle again. He was the head coach at Providence in the 80s after being an assistant with Jim Boeheim in 1976. He coached Providence and Billy Donovan, who's the head coach of the Chicago Bulls. He made it to the Final Four in New Orleans in 1987. He went on to become the head coach at Kentucky at a time where Kentucky was making a transition out of being on probation. And he led them to a national championship. The Kentucky job really sort of elevated Pitino's namesake, right? He just kind of elevated it because he took a program that is so rich in college basketball history and got him right back on top of the mountain. But the other thing that he did was he was part of that legacy game against Duke where Christian Laettner hit that shot. He was the coach on the other side that got Kentucky back into that basketball game. And while it was heartbreaking, right, for Kentucky fans to see Laettner hit that shot, they knew their team was back, that they had the right guy in place that was going to become the head coach and was going to lead Kentucky back to glory, which he did. Then he went on to Louisville. And he did the same thing at Louisville in winning a national championship in 2013. But that got vacated. And there were a lot of problems at Louisville. And one of the big problems at Louisville was that people on his staff decided to bring in some escorts to entertain recruits while they were on a visit to Louisville. And while Pitino denied he knew about it, it didn't seem to matter to the people in charge because in the end, it's his job. It is his program to control. And if you had agents on your staff that were going to do that kind of thing, that even if you did not know about it, there was a belief that at least it must have been known that you would have been okay with it. Because even if they tried to keep it from you, it was probably too big of a deal to keep from you, and they probably knew you weren't really going to object in the first place. So he leaves Louisville. He's fired from Louisville. His championship is vacated. Then he goes to Greece, and he's coaching in Greece. And in 2020, Iona brings him back because after an investigation, and he wasn't charged with anything from an NCAA violation thing, or he wasn't going to be on probation and all of that. But it still left a nasty taste in people's mouths about Rick Pitino and how does he run a program. Well, he took Iona to two NCAA tournaments in the 3 years that he's been there, including this year, losing in the opening round to UConn. But people have been wondering about Rick Pitino. Would he want to get back into big-time college basketball? Would he want to take one of the Power Six jobs? Now, he did what you normally would do in a situation where you don't have anything. You sort of say the right things about where you're at, even though you might be interested in an opening if an opening pops up. And he was very interested in the opening at St. John's. So now he is the coach in the Big East again. He is in the Power Six again. He is back in New York City. He grew up in Long Island. He loves New York, loves New York. Was the head coach of both the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks. He has completed a real college basketball NBA coaching resume. He has coached at some of the premier places that you can coach in both levels, right? Now he's at St. John's. St. John's has been relatively irrelevant since Lou Carnesecca's day in the Big East. And it's not even so much that Lou Carnesecca and St. John's, that's not an isolated thing. The Big East itself has gone through a massive transition with the departure of some schools due to an alignment with the ACC. But it's been a long time since St. John's was really a heavy, heavy part of the NCAA landscape. And now Rick Pitino is going to have to put more of a build. The thing about it is people are looking at his team at Iona and saying, you know, it's a really good basketball team that's bringing back a lot of players, and they're likely to win their conference again, and they're likely to be in the NCAA tournament again. Why would Rick Pitino leave there to do a rebuild at St. John's? Because it's St. John's, and because it's in the Big East, and because I think Pitino, even at 70 years old, still has a drive to get back to a program he can take to the top. No matter how good of a coach you are, no matter how you recruit, the underlining belief of the NCAA tournament is, in the end, it's going to be schools from the heavier basketball conferences, the Power Six, as I just mentioned, that are going to win this thing. That mid-majors just don't win the NCAA tournament. They're not going to. Now, Gonzaga has a chance to do that, but Gonzaga has been building that program up for 20 years. Rick Pitino doesn't have 20 years. And Iona's a good school, and you can recruit there because it's not that far from New York City. It's only, like, I think, 15 miles from Manhattan. So you can recruit New York City kids to go to Iona. But it's not in the Big East, and it's not that iron sharpens iron thing. And I think that's what Rick Pitino still wants at 70 years old. Now, would he want the rigors of a job like Kentucky, right? A deep fan base that sort of extends out, and the high pressure of recruiting and dealing with what John Calipari deals with year in and year out, those sort of upper echelon of McDonald All-American kids that are looking at NIL deals and whatnot. He'll get those players at St. John's. But I don't think he wants the same thing that John Calipari's dealing with at Kentucky or Mick Cronin is dealing with at UCLA. And I think St. John's, for him at 70 years old, and by the way, he looks great for 70 years old. He looks fantastic. But nevertheless, Rick Pitino is back in the game. He was always back in the game at Iona because, but let's be honest, he only sort of popped up, you know, in the NCAA tournament after the team won its, you know, won its conference. But now he's going to be a presence on the sidelines of a conference that gets good television numbers during the regular season, has very important Big East matchups during the regular season, and their conference tournament is one of the better conference tournaments in college basketball. But the problems that Rick Pitino have aren't going to go anywhere, right? There's still going to be people that are going to look at a vacated NCAA championship and still wonder why we're letting this guy get another chance. But if we said many, many times, you know what? There is just no proper way to get a guy out of the business. There's going to be schools that are going to bring you back and give you an opportunity to redeem yourself when you make mistakes. Now, in the case of Louisville, if we believe Rick Pitino that he had no idea that escorts were being used to entertain recruits, then we ask not the question of why didn't you know, but the question is what kind of reign of the program did you really have? How much of a loose cannon were those assistants? How much of the program's culture was not dictated by you, right? It's sort of that Colonel Jessup thing in A Few Good Men. If you give orders and everybody follows your orders, there's no reason to, you know, no reason to do that. Rick Pitino did not have an established presence enough among his own staff that the people on the staff felt like this is something they would do anyway, that this is sort of par for the course, that we could do this. We don't even have to tell Coach, but Coach wouldn't mind anyway. I mean, imagine being on a staff and knowing that your boss wants you to follow every single rule that the NCAA has, that everything has to be by the book. Everything has to be by the book. And then you decide to bring escorts into a place where kids are going to talk about that. Like, let's be honest. What 17-year-old kid entertained by strippers is not going to tell that to his friends? And word's going to get around pretty quickly what's happening. And you're willing to do that if you knew your boss was that tight on NCAA rules? Well, that's why people were mad at Rick Pitino at Louisville. Because apparently he wasn't tough enough, or he didn't establish himself enough, that his assistants didn't mind risking what they risked to do this to land the certain recruits. Rick Pitino believed that if he just didn't know about it, he could be insulated from it. And that's a problem. That's a problem because he thought, well, you can't fire me if I didn't know. And they said, no, we can fire you because you should have known. Right? It's like the parent when you get a kid and he's out there, stealing cars, he's making a mess, and the parents go, we had no idea. You should know what your kids are doing. You should have an idea of where they're at 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning. Right? Just because you don't know, it doesn't make you innocent of what went down. But nevertheless, he paid his dues. He was out of the game for a while. He was fired in 2017, spent some time in Greece, brought back in Iona in 2020. It was 3 years out of the major college basketball, and he didn't get to go right to a major job with worth $5 million a year or anything like that. He went to Iona, right? He went back where people who knew him, who worked with him, who had been part of his career and his rise, were willing to give him a shot. The great thing about landing in Iona or any place like that is that they know the clock is ticking. They know that you're not going to be the coach there for a long time. Now, I personally am glad he's back in on that level because he's a very, very good coach. Now, I hope he learned a lesson about authority. I hope he learned a lesson about leadership even at his age. I mean, for a guy that was the head coach in Boston, the Celtics and the Knicks and Kentucky, a blue blood program, Louisville, one of the top, one of the more not necessarily blue blood programs, but again, an ACC school, a major ACC school when they're playing good basketball, that he is still learning lessons even at his age. But the Big East got a little bit better because we'll see with Ed Cooley at Georgetown when he goes over to Georgetown, because he's a very good coach too, to start bringing these programs back. It's not so much a nostalgia thing. I mean, for a lot of people it is. I mean, they remember the sweaters of Lou Carnesecca and Big John Thompson on the sidelines at Georgetown. You know, it's not so much that. But it is the Big East, and there are schools in the Big East. And when you look at the way that conference is, they just haven't been relevant. And now they hope to get back to relevancy in a conference that they helped define. All right, we'll continue in his Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Coming up next, should we all gather by our TVs tonight in celebration or anticipate a celebration? We'll talk about that.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue it as Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, coming up in this hour, we are going to be talking to Joe Zagacki.
Zagacki?
I may not be able to pronounce it, but I certainly know what he wants to talk about. We're going to talk Miami Hurricanes basketball, a team I did not believe in, started the NCAA tournament. I have no idea why I didn't. Isaiah Wong is a good player. Norchad Omier played at Arkansas State. I did some work with some Arkansas stations sports updates for a couple of years, so I knew Norchad Omier. I wrote his name down a million times when he played for Arkansas State, so I knew he would be a good addition to the Miami Hurricanes. I didn't know. Maybe it was health. Maybe I was a little. I have no idea. Maybe it was just the sexy 12 over the five that I was looking for in the tournament. But I had Drake. I thought Drake could beat the Hurricanes. Now the Hurricanes look strong. They look really good. So we'll talk to him about that coming up at 45 past the hour. So the United States and Japan tonight. Should we all gather at sports bars around the country and watch this thing like World Cup matches? Should we all be behind Team USA since we never really celebrate Team USA together as a country very often?
Probably, but I don't think we're going to.
I don't think we're going to, no. I don't think very many people know that the United States is playing Japan. Everybody in Japan's going to stay up to watch this. Or no, it'll be in the morning. What time would it be in Japan? I don't know. But nevertheless, yeah, they'll all gather to watch
it. They'll be up to watch it.
Well, they'll be up. It's not going to be night. It's night here. So it'll be morning there.
So they're having coffee?
I don't know what time it is in Japan, but
if it's either.
Not here, it's going to be daytime there, I think. So it'll probably be, let me try to do the math. I would think it would be early afternoon, maybe like mid-morning. Japan, it starts at 7 o'clock Eastern time, New York time. New York to Tokyo. Do the New York to Tokyo.
So 7 Eastern.
Yep.
Is, I guess it'll be 10 o'clock in the morning for them?
Yeah, 10 o'clock in the morning. So just as the day.
Or 9 o'clock. It'll be 9 o'clock in the morning because right now.
Just as the day starts work, getting started.
Yeah.
Day starts.
Actually, 6 in the morning for them.
6 in the morning? Okay.
Yeah, because I'm trying to do it backwards because if it's 8 o'clock our time right now, but it's 10 o'clock at night their time.
Oh, so you're just doing the regular old math.
So I'm just doing regular old math.
Now. Okay.
So you add one, then subtract two.
Isn't there like a website we could just put the time in east like and just have it translate?
I could, but what's the fun of that?
Well, no, why would you put your brain into extra exercise that it doesn't have to?
Because it keeps me young, Tony. Keeps me sharp.
Do you know that you ever have to when you were a kid, right? Remember how you used to do spelling words?
Yeah.
And so you have to memorize how to spell things.
Yep.
And you ever notice now, like when you tweet something, let's say you're tweeting something or putting something on Facebook or whatever, and you spell a word and you go, I don't know if that's right.
Oh, yeah.
And you look at it and you go, I don't want to look stupid by misspelling this word. So I'm going to look it up. And it's not even like thesaurus or something crazy like that. It's mostly like, did I get pumpkin right? Did I spell pumpkin correct? That doesn't look right. It's like our brain because it's like our brain has gotten lazy.
The best one I ever had, I've told my kids this over and over again, that when I was in college, remember how you had to write essays, you had to write in the blue book?
Yeah.
Yeah, blue books I don't even think exist anymore.
No.
But whenever you had to write an essay, kids, you had to go to the store and buy the blue book and then come in and write your essay down. I was in full writing mode. I was doing all right until I got to this one word, and I literally froze for about 5 minutes.
What was that word?
Of.
Of?
Of.
O-F?
O-F.
Couldn't figure. You're
I
like,
could
that
not.
Sound-
for whatever reason, I kept looking at it. I'm like, that doesn't look right. That doesn't look right.
Yeah.
And then I would erase it, and I put UV. I'm like, that's not right. You know. But I seriously, I mean, it was the most strangest mental block because I literally forgot how to write the word of.
Oh. No, the other day I was writing a thing for my Formula One podcast, and I was adding up points, right? I was going back. I was like, how many points has he had over the last 7 races? And going back to last year. And so I called it up, and I'm not kidding. I went to my calculator, and I was going 6 plus 7 plus 11. And I'm like, have I forgotten how to do a running addition of simple numbers? That I immediately went to the calculator. I'm like, it wasn't even a thought. My brain just went, no, we're not doing, no, calculator, bring it over. We're done with this. I was like, why can't I do 6 plus 11 plus 19, like in my head?
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing? I'm only doing 7 of them, and it's not big numbers. It might be 2 digits. It might be 1 digit. And I'm like, wait a minute, why am I using a calculator? God, what's going to happen to me when I'm 70? Am I going to need an AI machine to do everything? I'm like, boiling water, what do I do? The computer's going to go, put the water in the pot. Put the water in the pot? What are you talking about? Turn off the temperature on the stove? Huh? What do you mean? Like, am I going to be that in 50 years? I mean, not 50 years, but like 20 years? If I'm using a calculator to do basic math. It's not like I was trying to find the square root of 172, right? Which I would definitely use a calculator for. But nevertheless, it's like simple addition.
Yeah. That's why, when I'm able to do it in my head, I still look like a god to my 6-year-old.
I know. I like, and I do that. I'll do that at the grocery store.
He even quizzes me now.
Does he? Yeah. Nice. Are you?
You're like, Dad, what's 17 plus 10?
Yeah, right now. Oh.
Yeah, 27, son.
Let me see. One, carry the one, 27.
What? Didn't even use your fingers.
Why couldn't I have been like that calculator guy I used to see when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Where they would ask him like 365 times 410. And you just go, boom, done.
And there is a way to do that.
Yeah, there's fun ways to do
but
that.
But I can't do it.
I follow it. And nevertheless. So tonight, the United States will take on Japan. Japan with a comeback victory against Mexico last night.
Yeah, I thought
wild
for sure
game.
Mexico was done.
Mexico looked like they were cruising to a victory. Their win probability was way up.
I do have a little bit of beef. I think you brought it up before, and it kind of irked me last night as well. I think I'm a little bothered by the fact that Austin Barnes is for Team Mexico.
Okay, so tell me about that.
Because he's able to play for Mexico because his mother is Mexican-American, even though I think she was born in America. He was born in America, definitely. He was born in Riverside, California.
Mm, no.
And I think she – I don't think – she's Mexican-American,
It's blurring the line way too much.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that. Now,
I get that you know, you want to have these star-studded events. You want to have names that you recognize and stuff, but I feel like Team Mexico wasn't really represented by Mexico.
No,
I don't see that happening with Japan.
No, I agree. I agree completely. I understand where baseball is coming from. Baseball is like, look, the more we can take our talent,
right,
and spread it out in this, the better it's going to be, right? So if you are a player, and remember we talked about this with Israel, if you're a Jewish player and you want to play for Israel, you can.
Right.
Right? So you can play if you have some family connection to the country. But I don't like it at the Olympics. Like, I don't like it when I find out some guy who was born in New Rochelle, New York, is downhill skiing from Austria because his great-grandfather lived in Austria. It's like, well, we can all do that, can't we? Like, we can all trace our heritage down to somebody from somewhere.
And, you know, and even if it's not, like, somebody good. I mean, even if you're just like, oh, you know, run-of-the-mill player, but because I'm one-tenth Antiguan, I can play for Antigua.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I think there was an American swimmer who did that. Who swam for another country because her mom was from that country or her dad was from that country. And she was like literally, she was the flag bearer because they didn't really have any other Olympian.
Right. I remember that story I told you about the two rich people from Trinidad, Tobago that got to cross-country ski in the Winter Olympics? There was this upscale couple from New York. I think he worked on Wall Street. They were rich. They bought a home in Trinidad, Tobago. This is not even heritage. This is just being a citizen of the country. They bought a home in Trinidad, Tobago so that they could represent Trinidad and Tobago in the Olympics. And they were like, what are we doing in the Winter Olympics? Don't worry about it. Just give us the citizenship we're looking for. And then we'll apply. We'll do the applications. And they did.
Yeah.
They did.
And that was the thing. I was like, I'm watching the game last night, and then all of a sudden I see Austin Barnes coming up to bat. I'm like, Austin Barnes. I mean, I know he's the backup catcher for the Dodgers, but I was like, how is he playing for Team Mexico?
Right? Exactly.
I mean, I'm not going to put it past him. If, you know, say he was born in Mexico, you know, because dad, mom are living down there during that time. And I was like, you know, I'm fine with that.
Well,
but it was just the fact that he's piggybacking on the fact that his mom is Mexican-American.
Great comeback for Japan last night. They'll take on the United States tonight. I just jumped on this train. These are the two best teams in the tournament, would you say? I mean, Dominican Republic was really good, but these, I mean,
Venezuela was good, but
no underdog story here. These are like the United States. It's
probably
champ.
Who you expected.
Japan's won it before. Is what you expect. Japan and the United States in the World Baseball Classic.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Again, we will be talking Miami Hurricanes basketball coming up with their play-by-play announcer as they are on their way to Kansas City for a matchup with the Houston Cougars on Thursday for the number one seed in the Midwest region, Miami a 5 seed. Miami had a team. They have strong players. There's no question about it. They have strong players. But they went through a stumble around January. They were losing some games, kind of back and forth. They were dealing with some health issues. But nevertheless, when they are healthy, they are a very good team. But they had me fooled. I mean, I saw them, you know, I saw them lose to Duke, and I was like, all right, I know they had beaten Duke during the regular season, but I thought, you know what? I'll take a spunky team like Drake. I'll pick them. But, you know, they took care of Drake, and then they went on to beat Indiana, and now they've got a matchup with Houston coming up. So Miami is – okay, Miami's in the news this morning. And the reason they're in the news this morning is because the women's team last night beat the number one seed in their region, Indiana. Now, before you go, well – I don't know about that. Why is that big news? Well, one, It's big news from a basketball standpoint because number one seeds in the women's tournament don't go down like they've been going down. They just don't. There's such a difference between the top seeds in women's basketball and the bottom seeds in women's basketball that's really, really hard. But Ole Miss pulled it off beating Stanford, and now Miami's pulled it off by beating Indiana. Now, why is that a big deal? Well, guess who plays for Miami? The women's team. Remember those two twins, the Cavender twins, that are on TikTok and they make big news? They're on Miami. And right now, the investment that John Ruiz and the people of Miami, now John Ruiz is a billionaire who is he's not responsible per se for a lot of the NIL deals that are going on with Miami athletes, but he's put a lot of money into the fund that supports NIL deals for Miami athletes. He is a very wealthy, he started a company that gets Medicare overpayments. Like somehow they fix your Medicare. So he became a wealthy man with that, with a company that does that. And he's given it back. He's got kids that went through Miami. A couple were athletes. He's in his mid-50s. He's very wealthy. He loves the Hurricanes. And he's public about it. So these twins play for Miami. Their TikTok fame has sort of allowed them to generate some really nice NIL deals. And the players on the Hurricanes are like any other team around college sports, where their players have six-figure, seven-figure NIL deals. And that's what he does. He's publicly supporting it. And where Miami it's a little different is you don't necessarily know the backers at a lot of schools, right? Like the people who run these collectives. So all these schools now have these collectives, right? Fans, big alumni, big wealthy alumni that are pooling their money to help the NIL deals so they can draw in the recruits. But you don't really know. There's a lot of them are kind of their faces are hidden. Who's behind this? Who's putting this much money in? But not him. He's more than happy to be the public face of Miami. And that's, you know, if you go back in the history of Miami sports, there were a couple of people like that who did that, but never couldn't admit it because it was always a problem. Right. But now you've got this, you know, you've got this booster who's like, well, this is all up and up and I'm going to make sure that these guys are taken care of. And Jim Larrañaga has done that, has added that to his repertoire, like you would expect a coach to do, right? That there is this collective, there's NIL opportunities in Miami, probably more so in other places. It's South Florida. We've got a lot of rich alumni. We got a lot of people that really want to be part of helping us grow this program by attracting the athletes to come here. And so now you've got a program that's, you know, fifth seed taking on the Houston Cougars with guys that have come in there from the transfer portal. And then you got the Cavender twins who have got a lot of TikTok fame, but last night they shut down Indiana. In fact, one of the players was at the free throw line, made a free throw and shushed the crowd. I mean, that's made for NIL, right? That's made for NIL. So we'll talk to their play-by-play announcer again coming up in just a couple of minutes to talk about their season out of the ACC and their matchup against Houston. That's Joe Zaki. Will join us from Miami. I've never really, all the years that Miami was good at football, I never was attracted as a youngster to liking them, but I always respected them. They were that program that was always good. Jimmy Johnson and whatnot, always good, had good players. They were sort of the rebels. And when you're a kid, you tend to like the rebels. You tend to like the people that aren't doing it the same old way. I mean, to me, it was attractive as a youngster to see a Miami team that kind of bent the rules a little bit, because aren't we all as kids, we kind of like that. We like that avenue. We want to bend the rules, and we're now seeing people bend the rules. I think it's why Brian Bosworth was so popular, because he was wearing, you know, National Communists Against Athlete t-shirts and whatnot, and he was a rebel. And there's an attractiveness to that. And then when you get older, you sort of look back on it, and you're like, that's like a rogue program. Like that was insane what was happening down there in the 1980s and even in the 90s, how just crazy it was. But there's an establishment there that, you know, in football especially, that they want to get back to a level of respectability on this college athletic landscape. Remember, I I can remember a time where Miami baseball was one of the top baseball programs in the country, as well as their football program. And now their basketball program, as healthy as they are going up against the top-seeded Houston Cougars, a kind of vulnerable Houston Cougars team on Thursday in Kansas City, but nevertheless still a team that's not only been number one seed, but number one in the AP poll going into the tournament. Times were number one, kind of swapping it out with Alabama and Purdue and whatnot during the regular season. But now here's a chance to really put a big stamp on it. And if you are a booster of these kind of programs, this is exactly what you've been. This is exactly why you did it. This is exactly why you put the money into that. And that's the big problem with NIL. Not problem per se, but there's no other way to put it. If you are the NCAA and you're trying to get some way to wrap this up with a lasso, right? You're trying to control this. It's not controllable, right? It's the Supreme Court said student athletes can make money off name, image, and likeness. But the problem is that if I hire Steph Curry to do an ad, all right, if I'm a company, you know, Subway, right? Subway's, you know, they've got Steph Curry on ads. Let's say I'm Subway and I hire Steph Curry to talk about my sandwiches. Am I trying to influence Steph Curry in any other way than just pay him to sell sandwiches? Like, if I'm Subway, do I tell him, boy, it would really be great when you're a free agent if you could play for the Indiana Pacers? Or if you could play for the Miami Heat? Or you could play for the New York Knicks? Or you could play for the Dallas Mavericks? No. You're hiring an athlete for who they are, for what they've accomplished, and you're telling them, we think you are a recognizable face that people like, and we would like you to endorse our product, right? Same thing in golf. You watch these golf club commercials with Rory McIlroy and Colin Morikawa and Tiger Woods. They've got this new TaylorMade driver that all three of them are in an ad for. TaylorMade's not trying to influence them to do something on their behalf other than play this club, you're a paid endorser of the product, be in this commercial so we can sell more drivers. Okay. But NIL is different. NIL is, you know, you may be somebody, you may be nobody, but we like you for what you can bring, and we'd like to pay you for being in something. What? I don't know. Whatever. But it better be something. You can't directly give a player money just for nothing, but you certainly can put him in something basic and pay him $800,000 for it. And then the NCAA is like, well, we have to get a handle on this. Well, how can you get a handle on it when the Supreme Court says that these athletes can negotiate whatever deal they want? Once the NCAA tries to restrict this kind of thing, that it's going to get taken right back into the courts. And you know who's going to lead the way? The people that are putting money behind these collectives. We talk a lot about owners in sports, right? Billionaires. Right, these people that have all the money in the world, buy an island, buy a jet, but they can't buy a Larry O'Brien trophy. They can't buy a Vince Lombardi trophy. They can't buy a World Series trophy. Right, what they can do is they can get into the system as a team owner and then work within the system and work their tail off, and hopefully that they will put the right pieces in place, hire the right people, sign the right people, and next thing you know, and maybe some luck, maybe some skill, whatever it may be, they might one day have a picture of them on their private jet hugging the trophy with a smile on their face from ear to ear. If you are a businessman that loves State U, this is your way of doing that, like Mark Cuban does with the Dallas Mavericks, like Stan Kroenke does with the Rams, or anybody else that's an owner in a league that won a championship. If you run a bank or you sitting on your island house in South Florida and you love the Miami Hurricanes more than life itself, you can't play for the Hurricanes, you're not going to coach for the Hurricanes, but you certainly can be part of their success. And again, getting that national championship, if you're looking back as a guy that's had success on every level of business, and you've reached a point now where you're like, I'm going to put $20 million into this collective to get two McDonald's All-Americans to come here, five five-star recruits on football, right? Or whatever it may be, and then look back and go, and guess what we got? We got in the playoff. We got in the NCAA tournament, made it to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, maybe even in the Final Four. Whatever may happen, if you're part of that, and you know that even though the school will not recognize your involvement directly, but they know indirectly that your money helped them get this, again, it's something a billionaire can't buy. All right, so we'll talk about the Miami Hurricanes coming up next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Continuing along in the coverage of the NCAA tournament. Let's go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive, we're making things even easier. We help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com, 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Joe Zagacki joins us from Miami Hurricanes play-by-plays. The Hurricanes head to Kansas City. They'll take on the number one seed Houston Cougars in the Midwest region. How are you, Joe?
I'm good, Tony. Looking forward to Sweet 16. So far, so good. Been a good ride.
Can you give me a description of how the Miami Hurricanes played in their game against Indiana the last time we saw them? Give us an idea of what that game was like against the Hoosiers.
Yeah, they played. They were exquisite. They turned basketball into ballet. They just, for the most part, took Indiana apart. They were the faster, quicker, more athletic team. Indiana made a run at the end of the first half, beginning of the second half, where they took the lead briefly, but Miami crushed them on the boards, 29 second chance points, beat them on the boards. I think the final total was 38 to 25, something like that. I can't quite remember, but Norchad Omir had 17 rebounds in the game, 9 offensive rebounds. Miami beat him in every category, beat him from the field, beat him at the free throw line, beat him rebounding.
From the standpoint of this season, there were some injuries, there was this lull, then there was this win streak. Overall, though, this is a typical season that happens in the long run of college basketball. But was there a feeling like this team was underachieving at times, overachieving at times? What was the trajectory of how the season played out?
I think they're actually right where they expected to be. You know, the 27-7, they actually, two of the losses, one was without Nigel Pack, one was without Norchad Omir, and then three of the other losses were one possession games in the final possession of the game. So if they were underachieving, it was only because they lost in January on the road at North Carolina State in overtime by a bucket, lost to Pittsburgh on the last shot of the game in January, and lost to Duke at Duke in January. So I don't think they really underachieve. I think they're right where they want to be. Maybe they could have had, instead of 27 wins, be at the 30-win mark. Maybe that would get them a little more respect around the country. But they were an Elite Eight team last year. Isaiah Wong is one of the best players in the country. Omir is one of the toughest players to play because of his strength, not so much his length, but his strength. And then, Nigel Pack, He can hit a three-pointer from anywhere on the floor, which really puts a lot of stress on the defense.
Jim Larrañaga has been there a while, right? 2013, 2012 from George Mason. He's been there a while. What is his style of play? How has he built it to a point now where this is a consistent team?
12 years he's been at the University of Miami, and this is the fifth time he's taken them to the Sweet 16. He had a lull maybe a couple years ago, because they had some situations trying to get their roster together. Everybody knows about how, an FBI situation that went around the country, and in Miami's case, it went nowhere. At any rate, Coach Larrañaga is probably, I've been around a lot of great coaches, from Howard Schnellenberger to Jimmy Johnson to Dennis Erickson to Leonard Hamilton, every guy I've been in Miami. And Jim Larrañaga is right at the top of that list. He's creative, he's thoughtful. There's nothing that he hasn't seen that he can't adjust to. He's the kind of coach that doesn't dwell on what he doesn't have. He works with what he does have. And at the University of Miami, you are in recruiting battles with North Carolina, Duke, and Virginia. You're probably not going to win those battles. They're going to get the McDonald's All-Americans. They're going to get all the five-star players. He's going to get guys that he has to develop, maybe go into the transfer portal a little bit, but nonetheless still develop those players, and then he will adjust his style. Last year, Miami was played small ball. This year, they play smaller ball because of Norchad Omier. So he's able to adjust. He's had big teams. He's had fast teams. He's had healthy teams. He's had injured teams. The common denominator is he's been able to find a way to win.
You mentioned team players that have come in through the transfer portal, but one player that's been there a while is Isaiah Wong. Talk about his play and his importance on this Hurricanes team.
Yeah, he's fabulous. He's a fourth-year player from Philadelphia. He never you never know if he's – you don't know with Isaiah when he walks by you if he has scored 27 points in a game like he did against Indiana, or if he scored 8 points in a game or whatever it was like he did against Drake. He's just the kind of guy that just – his emotions rarely change. But on the court, he is a fierce competitor. He can score inside. He can score outside. 38% three-point shooter. Has an array of moves. Scores through the defense. From the free throw line. Has probably the best mid-range game in the country. And then can step back and make threes when needed.
There is this level of college basketball now. There's NIL, there's transfer portals. There's a way to now get the proper chemistry. You mentioned Jim Larrañaga being willing to go down that road. Players will go to schools for different reasons. Sometimes it's NIL, sometimes it's the coach. How has he managed all of the new ways college basketball business has been run when other coaches seem to have said, you know, I think I got to get out of this thing?
He's just, Tony, he's just a really smart, thoughtful person, and he has seen everything, so nothing bothers him, and he figures it out. I think he goes along the line of, you know, in life you're going to have issues, but issues have solutions. We got to find them, so he finds solutions. Now he's trying to find a solution on how to manage the NIL, and he tells his team, look, you see Steph Curry's on a Subway commercial. That's NIL. That's what you do for NIL. When it comes to running his basketball program, nobody's going to tell him how to run his basketball program.
Yeah.
He runs his program the same way today as he did when he came here from George Mason. And I would imagine he started running the Miami program the same way he did at George Mason. Everything is the same. There's a routine to how they practice, how they travel, how they play, what plays they call, what defense they'll be in, what the situation calls for. Nothing is ever a surprise to his players. And then I think this is the most fabulous thing about him is he finds a way to connect with his players. Wilga Poplar is a fabulous young player. He only started playing basketball a couple years ago. He was a baseball player in Philadelphia, a kid. There weren't opportunities for him to play baseball, so he turned to basketball. But he's from a tough spot, a tough area in Philadelphia. Not a lot of people can reach across and pull something out of a kid like Wilga, and Jim Larrañaga is able to do that. And he's got Jordan Miller, who he brings in, and Jordan Miller has turned out to be one of the most crafty players in all of college basketball. And he works with him with his post moves. And now, you know, Jordan Miller is almost unstoppable in the post. He's a 58% shooter in his career. So he's just a really smart guy, very level-headed, gives every kid a chance, and just finds a way to make a connection with his players.
In the couple of days that you've had to prep for Houston, how do you see the way Miami will have to play against the Cougars?
Well, we haven't had a lot of time to prep. We played on Sunday night, and we traveled all day yesterday. So we haven't had a lot of time.
They don't get you right out of the arena like they do in other sports where they go, the plane leaves in 2 hours.
Yeah, I wish. But, you know, remember, the tournament's controlled by the NCAA.
True.
So you're at their mercy. You know, and sometimes that can be a little strange. So we didn't get home yesterday noon, and the University of Miami will practice today. So they'll get their first look at what Coach L thinks about Houston, and they'll practice again tomorrow morning a little bit. And then I think we're going to fly to Kansas City tomorrow at some point. But clearly, Houston is a very hard-nosed, tough team that plays extremely hard, and Miami will know they'll have to match Houston's intensity and especially match their intensity when it comes to rebounding. And Miami, I think this year, is 23-1 when they win the rebounding battle, and they know they're going to have a real tug of war rebounding with Houston.
Matt, I mean, I really appreciate it, Joe. Thank you so much for joining us, and I really appreciate the busy nature of what you're going through this week and spending some time with us to talk about the Canes.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Joe Zaki, again, Miami Hurricanes play-by-play announcer. As they get ready to go to Kansas City Friday, they'll take on the top-seeded Houston Cougars in the NCAA Tournament Sweet 16. Jim Larrañaga, he is 100% right. He's one of the good guys in the sport and a really solid coach. Remember, he took George Mason to the Final Four back in 2006, I want to say 2007, I believe, one of the years. And, you know, that was kind of brought George Mason to not only the spotlight, but as big a spotlight as you can get. Some of these surprise teams make a run and they die out. Very few of them ever get to the big level of the Final Four, but he had Gonzaga in the Final Four. They lost to Florida. He takes the Miami job in 2013, and he's gone to 5 Sweet 16s since arriving about 10, 11 years ago. That is really impressive, you know, but like you said, there was a little bit of a lull as they went through an investigation that didn't go anywhere. But now, using both the NIL transfer portal, he's built the Hurricanes up to a program that's now in another Sweet 16 for the people down in Coral Gables. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Hour one of the books. We get to hour two coming up next.